Hi, I'm Steve Goldstein, and this is the Friday Newscap podcast. Each week, we review the biggest stories with experts, reporters, and commentators to put the news in perspective. Here's this week's episode.
We have spending needs. Rich people do not need any more help getting richer. It's not like they're going to try to buy every Tesla model, right? So there's only so much they can do with their money.
Here's where I stand philosophically. This is not our money. It belongs to the people. They earned it through blood, sweat, and tears. I get really irritated as political people. We think that the people's money and what they earn is ours, and we get so flippant about it.
We want to build a broad coalition with the task force so that we make certain that issues like this aren't swept under the rug, so that they're not forgotten or misappropriated.
I think John McCain had a lot to getting President Bush, a lot to do with it, to go into the Middle East, which was a catastrophe. To me, John McCain, I wasn't a fan, but I would never do a thing like that.
And with us to wrap up the 2019 legislative session, talk about a new Arizona Corporation Commissioner and more, are Stan Barnes of Copper State Consulting and David Lujan of the Arizona Center for Economic Progress. Guys, welcome back.
Good to be
here. Morning.
So, Stan, your president did something. Someone you've supported quite a bit, President Trump, has done
something. This is how we're going to start, Steve, right? All right.
Has done something that seems to be upsetting the Arizona business community. These proposed tariffs on Mexico tied to immigration numbers. Why is he doing this at this point?
I think I accept what he says on face value, meaning he believes part of our problem is that Mexico is just not pulling its weight in this circumstance. I get the business community doing its thing. They're playing their role. That businesses hate tariffs. I get it. In my own mind, though, I think in the long game, this is not a bad thing. And this is what I analogize as medicine. We got to take our medicine. This is part of the pain of fixing the overall problem. It hits me as a surprise. I'm like every other American. I woke up and I went, well, really? What? But what a dramatic, bold move by this president.
But how is it directly tied, though, to high immigration numbers and to this tariff situation? Again, this is just one person's opinion. She's a Democrat, but we had Janet Napolitano in this week, and she said, yeah, the border's a concern, but it's not a concern that President Trump is making it out to be.
Yeah, I think she's wrong. I think the border is every bit the concern. I think there's a little bit of denial going on, and it's all wrapped in super politics and looking for constituencies and the like. Trump is a hard-edged guy, and this is a hard-edged business move. He's making the immigration thing Mexico's problem as well as our problem.
David?
Well, I think if you want to put a wet blanket on Arizona's economy, this is the way to do it. I think, you know, Arizona's economy is so tied to relations with Mexico, and this is going to impact all Arizonans if it happens. It's going to impact in jobs. It's going to impact in wages and in taxes that Arizonans pay. And, you know, the last I heard, Arizona was a swing state in 2020, and this is not going to help Trump's chances in Arizona if he goes forward with something like this.
So the business community we know is upset about this. We're going to hear from Glenn Hammer later in our show. But is this Trump playing to his base? I mean, is he concerned about that response, or is he concerned about the response from those people who really want him to do something on immigration?
Well, I think he's playing to his base. I think he's trying to come up with something that's going to make a difference. But, you know, this is a very complex problem, and I don't think that the increasing tariffs is going to be the answer. And like I said, the people who are going to pay are going to be the people in particularly the states that do a lot of business, a lot of trade with Mexico, and Arizona is one of the biggest.
Sometimes we can't see the forest for the trees. Let's remember, Trump is not a politician. If you need a better example, this move is not a political move. This is a leverage New York developer businessman move. I'm not saying it's right or wrong, but I reward his bold thinking on the thing. And I see memes flying through the internet saying, all right, I guess Mexico is paying for the wall, things like that. So, yeah, I think the base is delighted by this whole deal. And some, thoughtful middle-of-the-road economists are giving him props for the, what I said, the long game on the tariffs. We've been done wrong in general. The Mexico thing is almost like taking the country hostage on this deal.
The most shocking thing you said is that you were on the internet, because I don't think I'll agree with that. So let's talk about someone who is a politician, and that is Governor Doug Ducey. And David, let me start with you on this. Governor Ducey has been, you know, to be kind, sort of lukewarm and not real strong on most things the president has said. He's trying to play both sides. Is he hurting the state the way he's reacted already to this? He hasn't come out more strongly. What do you think?
Yeah, I think so. I'm really surprised that he hasn't come out strong against this. It's been very lukewarm, like we've seen on most things like this. And you know, I'm surprised that he knows how Arizona can be hurt and how our economy is going to be hurt by these tariffs. And so we need him to be standing up strong against President Trump and telling him how much this is going to hurt Arizona. And it's a real shame that he hasn't done that yet.
Stan, does he need to do that?
I don't think so. I think he's a middle ground, moderate in tone kind of governor, steady handed. He's not out there to score a big social media or general media point.
Are there political considerations, though, for him? Because there shouldn't be. This is a guy, talking about broad support. His base, if he has a base, is pretty wide. He was one Republican who won handily. I mean, is this about his future prospects, or does he really sort of not know what to say here?
No, I think I give him credit for seeing the problem from both sides. I think the governor believes the border problem is a real problem, and the governor believes the president is acting boldly. He may not agree with that, but it's a difficult circumstance for a Republican governor. Let's give it that. If you're trying to stand in the balance point like Doug Ducey's doing. But I think he's doing right with it in terms of balancing the constituency viewpoint.
How does this end up playing in Arizona, though, we talked about Trump's base and then the business community, right? But like Ducey, like Steve said, was elected by, you know, a pretty good majority here, but on, I would say, like a pretty strong business Republican platform. Does this go against that brand?
A little bit, but I think my analogy on this is it's kind of like sales taxes. The reason everyone thinks they can raise sales taxes is because no one directly feels it or can quantify it. The tariff thing is very similar. Do you want to do something bold about illegal immigration? Yes. And the tariff thing for most people is abstract, and they'll never feel it. They can't quantify it. The Arizona Chamber of Commerce will tell you, we got to put up the flag. This is a big, bad thing. But no one average can. I can't. I'm average. I can't quantify what the tariff thing means to me. Maybe if I was back in the cotton farming business in Pinal County, I could. But most people aren't. Most people are just living their lives.
But I think they will feel it if they start to lose jobs, if they start to see the price of goods going up. And I think there's a real danger of that happening. And if that happens, then I do think it could impact politically, like I mentioned. I mean, we've got presidential election in 2020, you have a big election, and it's not just this, but then you also, I think we're going to talk about the McCain ship, that Later issue, on, yeah. And just, you know, how the president is taking some actions that really will, I think, negatively impact the perspectives of some Arizonans.
All right, my awkward segue from that, the news of the day, to the legislative session, which now feels like ancient history, which ended early Monday morning.
Goodness, so
yeah,
long ago.
Yeah. So, Stan, I don't know if there are winners and losers from this. The education community, and David, I wanted you to address this as well, obviously. There were some, and Governor Ducey did make some advances, did follow up on what he did with the last legislative session. But why, and maybe this is just the Republican versus Democratic philosophy, why more important to put more money in the rainy day fund than put more money in education? Because isn't that in some ways naively putting the rainy day fund, making it less important if you have more people who are educated?
I think some of our Democratic friends see it that way. I think what Doug Ducey sees and the Republican legislature is what happened when your guest Janet Napolitano was last governor, where when she left and went to work for the Obama administration, the economy cratered. Arizona lost one third of its revenue and no money in the bank, essentially. We had spent money in the good times, raised the baseline of the budget.
But even our friend Bob Robb has said, though, how big would the rainy day fund have had to be to counter that?
Fair enough. I think the rainy day fund is one of the parts of the equation. The other part is allowing the budget of the state to float up during good times. And that's when I heard Doug Ducey speak about it. He said, we can't let that happen. So I give him credit for that. It feels good to spend the money when you have it. But in state governance, once you raise that floor, all of a sudden, that's the new floor. And everybody thinks it's a cut if growth doesn't come. So this was a temperate conservative budget. And Republicans are running the state. That's the reflection of that.
But David, education, a lot of people are still wondering, how about a few hundred more million or something like
that? Right. Well, when you talk about that floor, the problem is that floor for public education and a lot of other things in Arizona is still below 2008 levels. It's still below where we were over a decade ago. And for us, it's not so much choosing between the rainy day fund and education. It was more choosing between tax cuts, a $386 million tax cuts, worth of tax cuts versus putting more money into education and other priorities. And I think that is what really overshadowed this budget. There were some good things that were in the budget, but that $386 million worth of tax cuts, I think, is really fiscally irresponsible. And going back to Governor Napolitano, the last time we had a $386 million income tax cut like that was 2006. Just like this year, we had a $1 billion budget surplus. And then so the legislature that year did a huge income tax cut. The next year, the recession began. 2 years later, Arizona had a $1 billion budget deficit, and we were facing the largest cuts to public education in state history. So I think what a lot of people in the education community were really looking for is, rather than having those tax cuts, let's put that money into our schools, our universities, our community colleges, all of those things that are still below 2008 funding levels. And one thing I'll add, too, it's not like in 2008 we were, you know, doing well. We were in the bottom 10 in education funding back in 2008. So just to get to there, it's a big road.
And as many education leaders have pointed out this week, like, we are still among the lowest in the country in terms of per pupil funding. There was a new report out yesterday, I think, that still had us at 49th in the country for teacher pay. I want to ask a question about the legacy of Red for Ed here. I mean, you talk to education leaders, they'll say this is still happening. There were still teachers down there, a couple dozen in their red shirts on the last day when they were voting on the budget, but they were unhappy from what I heard talking to them afterward. Do you think that they were a non-factor this time? Do you think that they need to change approaches next time around?
Yeah, I do. They were a non-factor. They had their moment the year before, and they had the biggest moments we've ever seen politically. They got a lot in that deal. They flipped the governor from a 1% pay raise to a 20% pay raise, and that's happening. And this year, when they went down to kind of try to recreate the magic, it just wasn't there. Even our Democratic friends couldn't hand them that kind of political love because they got more than anyone else in some time.
So did we overstate the 31-29 House split then? I guess a lot of us thought, oh, it's going to make such a difference. It didn't seem to.
Yeah. Stan and I were talking before that, at the beginning of this session, I think we all thought that with the 31-29, the holdup would be ultimately in the House. But really, it was more in the Senate. And I think the one thing you have to say about this legislature, both caucuses, no matter how much fighting they seemed to be doing during session, when it came down to budget time, the two caucuses stayed very united. You saw the 31 Republicans in the House stuck together, and you saw all the Democrats stick together as well. And so that, I think, was a little bit surprising.
Yeah, I think that was the surprise. All the even money betting among, railbirds was the Republicans were going to split. I mean, the personalities, the money in the checkbook, you know. Fighting with the governor from the get-go over the conformity thing. But it was a miracle that they brought those 31 together, honestly.
That is Stan Barnes. Also here is David Lujan in Phoenix with Lauren Gilger. I'm Steve Goldstein. We are in the midst of the Friday newscap. We'll talk Arizona Corporation Commission right after this. It's the Friday newscap here on the show with Lauren Gilger. I'm Steve Goldstein. Getting back to Stan Barnes and David Lujan in just a moment. But some major Corporation Commission news happened yesterday, surprising a lot of us. And here to tell us more about that is Ryan Randazzo of the Arizona Republic. Ryan, good morning.
Morning.
So did you see this coming in any way? I was thinking about the recent time we had you on talking about whether APS's books need to be looked into more, this 4-1 vote. Andy Tobin was on the side of the 4. Was there any indication Tobin was not long for this job?
Well, there was indication that he was pretty frustrated with the job. I was definitely surprised that he resigned and took another job within the administration. But, reflecting on it, especially the last meeting, I mean, he's really been at odds with the other commissioners, oddly, at odd with the other Republicans on the commission. They just can't seem to agree on anything. Even when they're on the same side of an issue, they can't decide how to address it. And there's just a lot of personality politics on the commission. So, no, I don't think it's that surprising that he wasn't happy, although it's a very difficult time for a new person, I think, to come onto that board.
So let's talk about the new person who's coming onto that board, Leah Marquez Peterson, a longtime Tucson businesswoman. Tell us a little bit about her and what you think she might do here. Ryan, you there?
Well, that question, Lauren, was so harsh. So now we're back to Stan Barnes and David Lujan. So guys, let's get reaction as far as that goes when it comes down to, oh, Ryan is back. Okay. Hey, Ryan, you still there? Well, all right, Ryan. I think live radio has gotten us again. Stan, let's go to what Lauren was talking about. Do you know Leah Marcus Peterson? I know her only from moderating a debate in Tucson when she was going up against Ann Kirkpatrick.
Yeah, I know her more by reputation, but I have met her a few times as well. She seems gracious, dignified, civic-minded. She ran a campaign for Congress. She lost. No harm in that, though, having lived that life myself.
No,
thank you. The best person doesn't always win. That's what I say. But she ended up conducting herself very well. She's well-reputed within Republican circles.
But, David, one concern some folks have already expressed is that APS gave some money to her congressional campaign. And, of course, we've seen issues before. Folks were concerned about APS, quote-unquote, buying a couple of seats. Does that background concern you?
Yeah, it concerns me. And I think, as Ryan was mentioning, she comes in at a very difficult time. And APS is obviously going to be very front and center. And so it'd be nice, hopefully, she'll come in and she'll be, you know, impartial, and she'll come in and learn and not come in with any sort of agenda or be, you know, beholden in any way towards APS. I don't think she will be, but that is a concern when you have somebody who has been affiliated with them in that way before.
This comes, like you said, at this really critical moment on the CorpCom and for APS in terms of, you know, the looking at how much money they are making, how much money their CEO is making. I wonder if either of you can weigh in this would have been a good question for Ryan, too. But give us a sense of whether or not you think bringing in another person with this particular background, with a business background, will change the game here, will change this conversation.
I don't think it will. I think her and Annie Tobin are different personalities, but probably won't be that different in policy at that very narrow but deep policy place called the Arizona Corporation Commission. It's a numbers-driven, math-driven kind of thing. There is some overarching policy in renewable energy and that sort of thing, but when it comes to what the utility that's regulated is going to earn on its rate of return, I mean, that's kind of to the right of the decimal point kind of stuff. And so I think she's just going to blend in with that that middle ground Republican steady-handed thing that is trying to go on there.
Yeah, that would be my hunch too. I don't know Leah Marcus, but I know Andy Tobin. I served with him in the legislature, and from what I know of the two, what I've heard of Leah, I think ideologically and kind of, you know, philosophically, they're kind of very similar. And so I don't think there's going to be too much difference in terms of that, how they approach things. But I guess we'll have to wait and see.
You know, they're kind of a quasi-judicial thing, right? They don't get to do what legislators do, which is take each other in the corner and say, how are you going to vote on this? They don't do that. That's part of what really frustrated Andy Tobin, because he's still a Speaker of the House. As he told me, he's a fish out of water at the Corporation Commission. I agree with that.
He keeps trying to find a place where he'll fit in.
I'm glad you said that, not me.
Well, guys, one other quick thing on this topic, and that is that some people have speculated about, I'm sure it won't happen because it leads to constitutional change, but should a position like this be appointed by the governor? Should it be someone that needs more expertise in this particular area? Because it seems like a pretty complicated thing rather than just a lawmaker stepping up to the next position.
I do think that somebody who's in that position should have some background or some expertise in this. I think, I think it's a kind of a very niche kind of role I don't think any politician can just run for that. I've had people talk to me in the past about running for a corporation commission. I said, that's not my area. It's not my. And so I really think to do a good job, you have to have a little bit of background.
So you're clearly not a politician anymore.
A state that elects its mine inspector is going to continue to elect its corporation commissioners.
Because there has been talk about not doing this in an elected form. One last question about this. So last week, I think it was just last week, Bob Burns, who's now the chair of the commission, who's been a big APS critic, brought up the idea of deregulation, of allowing utilities like APS to compete for customers with other utilities. Any sense of whether that is a real idea at this point? It's been talked about many times in the past.
Yeah, you're right. Your listeners should know I'm involved in that issue. Mm-hmm. On the pro side, I help some of the larger customers who are interested in shopping for their power. They have been for 20-something years. And you're right. We did have it, and then it went away.
Yeah.
All the fun went out of it when Enron happened and California went dark. But there is some optimism among folks, and there's a kind of a weird coalition happening between renewable energy advocates and large customers, sophisticated customers. And they've combined to say, let us out, let us choose, because a lot of things will happen in a positive way. You'll get more renewable energy development. You'll get more cost-competitive pricing on electricity, which will lead to jobs and economic development and that sort of thing. I think we're going to get something to happen, and this summer it's going to play out.
I don't know much about that issue, but I think it sounds good. I mean,
it is right there.
Stan has convinced me.
So we're back to President Trump. We started the segment with President Trump. David, we're back to President Trump now. Why does Donald Trump what is this with John McCain? What is going on there?
I don't know. It's it seems like every time I'm on the show, we're talking about something like this. And, it is, I think it's childish. It's just bad behavior that you want to see. And, he said, well, it wasn't me, it was my administration. But, the White House, the administration really sets the tone for the rest of the country. And every time we hear of one of these things about President Trump, it makes me always think about where we're going as a country. And I always think about that old classic movie, A Wonderful Life. And in that movie, they have like the idyllic American town that's Bedford Falls, but then they show what would happen when you've got this leader who is, very self-interested and selfish and mean-spirited, and then they create this, Pottersville. And I think, the example that we're seeing from the president of other people emulate that. Other, children, and it's not just children, it's adults. And so I just feel sad every time I see that I feel like our country is becoming more and more like Pottersville every day.
Stan, I think that's a great analogy, but let me come back to something a little bit more specific on this, which is this a case where the president does set the tone, and maybe his staffers don't necessarily want to do these things, but they feel like got to please the boss, and then the backlash is not so great.
Yeah, I don't know what really happened on the McCain ship thing. I mean, I've been trying to absorb the information coming at me from the different news channels. I really can't tell you what happened. I know there's a controversy. I don't know if it's manufactured or not. But having said that, this petty side of this president is distasteful for most everybody, including me, a guy who voted for him, a guy who likes what he's doing. If I could magically remove that from him, we'd carve his face on Mount Rushmore. But instead, he's so hard to defend. He's so hard to love for most Americans. There is a big slice that is so delighted by the fact that he's non-political, and this is proof of it. But other than that, I wish he wouldn't do these sort of things. But I love his bold moves, and I love the way the economy's humming as well.
One question about this that's a little broader for both of you is this idea that a lot of folks are writing about, even on the national scale right now, of people, including Amy Klobuchar and the Democratic presidential pool, people are trying to sort of jockey for John McCain's legacy, right? Like, who owns it? Who gets to claim what he stood for and how they're going to carry it forward? What do you both think about that? I mean, obviously, it's a difficult one, and Meghan McCain seems to be the one who steps in every time and says, stop doing this, but it doesn't seem to be stopping.
Yeah, it is. That's subtle but important politics in a narrow but important universe of people that are kind of running the country. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting for us as Arizonans to see that play out, isn't it? It's even happening kind of on the ground in Arizona, too, with Martha McSally doing her best to be in both places at one time on the John McCain legacy. He wasn't loved by all Republicans in Arizona. We all know that. And so it's a complicated thing. It's really interesting that post-mortem, we're still talking about him as a political figure and its impact, his impact.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I didn't agree with a lot of things that John McCain did, but I think, very few people can argue with the fact that he was an American hero and just, what he did for our country. And so I think you're seeing people that are fighting to make sure that piece of John McCain is not trampled on, and particularly here in Arizona, we feel very strongly about that. I think a lot of us see John McCain as our Arizona hero, and I think it's dangerous for President Trump if he wants to be successful in Arizona in 2020. We talked about the tariffs earlier, but regardless of whether you like his politics or not, John McCain's. People in Arizona, I think, for the most part, see him as a very positive figure, as a hero. And so I don't think it's in President Trump's best interest to continue to trash him.
Let's take our final few minutes of the newscap and talk about another very political issue, It is Robert Mueller. And Stan, you'll say this is probably politics as usual, which is okay. But David, Greg Stanton has come out and said he would now be in favor of impeachment proceedings. And I was thinking, you know, that used to be a district that was seen as sort of a swing district. I guess it isn't anymore. I guess it's Democratic enough. Mm. Is this a political calculation by Greg Stanton, or do you think he really believes at this point, got to go forward?
I actually really do think that, you know, I was actually in D.C. last week, and I had an opportunity to have a conversation with Congressman Stanton about this very issue. And he was not decided at that point. He was really struggling and really going through and trying to think about, you know, what his position was on this issue. He has a very important spot on the Judiciary Committee. And so, you know, to see him come out with that statement yesterday, I was a little surprised because last week he hadn't. But I do think that the Mueller statement this earlier this week had an impact on him. I know that he was looking through the report and really, and I think a lot of Democrats are doing that. You know, I think for Democrats, they know what the political cost is if they proceed with impeachment. But I think now they're starting to see what's the political cost if we don't do that. And so I think in Greg's case, it's not I think, and with a lot of Democrats, they're not doing this in a partisan way. They're really taking time to think about it. And I think at some point, the political cost is going to shift. You know, we all assume that when it gets to the Senate Republican senators are not going to vote to impeach. But then I think there's going to be a cost to them as well, because I think if the House Democrats put on a very strong case to show that impeachment is necessary, and the Senate Republicans do not follow that, I think that people in 2020 are going to really question why some Senate Republicans are not going forward with impeachment.
So stand risks on both sides?
Yeah,
or no?
Did you ask if this was a political calculation?
I know, I try to keep my naivete down.
Is this your first day on the radio?
Yeah.
Of course it is. And
but wholly political.
But I think it's 99. It's like Ivory Soap political.
So David didn't convince you at all?
No, he didn't convince me. I'll give Greg Stanton the props for acting authentically. But a miscalculation, of course, in my opinion. I think the whole thing is about bruising Donald Trump up because they can't beat him with whatever candidate is so far left to win the Democratic nomination. And so the big overarching calculus is to bruise him so badly that they can beat him in 2020. One more thing. I've been dying to say this. Can you imagine if the report actually connected a line between the president and being guilty? If it used the word guilty, like Ken Starr said Bill Clinton was guilty. What if Mueller said he was guilty? Right now, Mueller's giving us a big ball of mush that you could translate any way you wish. But what if he actually said guilty? Because right now, the doors feel like they're blowing off Washington. We're going to impeach this president over this big ball of mush. What if he said guilty? I mean, the dome would pop off the Capitol. There'd be so much heat going on there.
David, we've got 20 seconds left.
Well, and I think that, but the Democrats, I think, are really taking time. I don't think the ball of heat is blowing off of the Capitol in Washington. I think, if it was, we'd already see them moving towards impeachment. I think they're being very deliberative and as non-political as this process can be. But it is always going to be political when you're talking about impeachment.
David Lujan of the Arizona Center for Economic Progress. Former state lawmaker, former congressional candidate, Stan Barnes of Copper State Consulting. Guys, thanks. You've been listening to the Friday Newscap from KJZZ's The Show. It's an original podcast recapping the week's big stories with experts, commentators, and reporters. You can get the full show podcast at podcast.kjzz.org. If you have any questions or comments, please email us at theshow@kjzz.org. I'm Steve Goldstein, and thanks for listening.